This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This episode contains explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Monday, September 19th, the Let Them Sleep In edition. I'm Zach Rosen. I host a podcast called The Best Advice Show, and I live in Detroit with my family. My oldest Noah is 5, and my youngest Ami is 2.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 littles, Henry who's 10, Oliver who's 8, and Teddy who's 5. We live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 9, and we live in Los Angeles.
Today on the show, Elizabeth talks with author Lisa Lewis about her book, The Sleep-Deprived Teen, Why Our Teenagers Are So Tired, and How Parents and Schools Can Help Them Thrive. But first, we wanted to jump into the mailbag. We got a few letters from listeners that had thoughts on the Between Two Homes episode.
Hi, Mom and Dad. As a person who was raised in a 50-50 home situation that was less than ideal, I wanted to write in, I was once a kid who was telling one parent, I'm not comfortable at the other house. I don't feel safe. And it was not heard or acted upon as much as it should have been. I was forced to do 50-50 time until turning 18, and now have a very strained relationship, at best, with the parent whose house I was trying to avoid. I've spent a lot of time in therapy trying to come to terms with feelings of abandonment and still struggle with the after effects of such a profound loss of choice. I highly encourage you to let your son try out some 90-10 time or 100-0 if that's the request to see if that can help his emotional state in any way. I also echo Elizabeth's thoughts that it sounds like there is some emotional abuse going on, which in my case was also accompanied by verbal and physical abuse by my step-siblings. Please regularly and routinely ask your child specific questions to show you are willing to hold that hard information if he's able to share it. Hoping good things for you and your son.
Thank you for that, and we actually have one more.
Dear Mom and Dad Are Fighting, I believe that your comments were far too mild, and that this mother and son are dealing with a potential narcissist who is now beginning to enact financial abuse. Hopefully this helps. As the letter was read, I grew more and more uncomfortable with the situation your son is in. And when you said that his father told him that if he moves out, he cannot take his things with him to your house because he bought them or whatever, my alarm started ringing at its highest volume. Your ex sounds a whole lot like my father, who is a textbook person with narcissistic personality disorder. And I endured many years of emotional, verbal, and occasionally physical abuse in my household growing up. I cut him out of my life on December 31st, 2001, because he had threatened to do a similar type of financial abuse to my son as he did with me, and I just could not allow that. You don't say in your letter why it is that you two split up. Was it because of similar issues? Your ex yelling? Being out of control? Financially abusive? Or even just never taking the blame? These can be small things if done very rarely, but they can also be really huge. I could be completely wrong here. This could be a rare situation and really not as bad as it sounds in my head. But as someone who was diagnosed with ADHD last year at 35, I am especially protective of fellow neurodiverse kids because not only does the world see us differently and present us with many more struggles, but we also tend to be much more sensitive and deal with hardships due to rejection sensitivity dysphoria, RSD. The way that his step-siblings are talking to your son especially make me think of RSD. But also just how freaking inappropriate it is. Please take a bigger look at your ex's behavior over the course of your relationship, and since he became a father to your son. Hopefully, I am totally off base here, but if I'm not, I urge you to seek a therapist for yourself and a lawyer for your son. Sending virtual hugs.
Thank you for both of those. That last point especially, I think, is a really important one, just like to regularly check in with your kid, because the situation, as our writers have written and as we discussed, it could be super serious. I mean, it is super serious, but yeah, I appreciate these critiques here. What do you all think?
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think how passionately these are written and sent in is indication of how dealing with someone who treats you like this, like, sits with you, and then you feel like you need to protect everyone else. So I think it's always important that if you think that something is going on, or you think that there's more than what's going on, regardless of the advice we gave you, right? We're not there. We don't know. That you take the most that you can to protect your child.
Absolutely. Encourage you to seek the support of a therapist for yourself and your son, and, you know, to speak to your lawyer and see what your options are, because this is a really tough situation. And, you know, I appreciate these two letter writers letting us know that we didn't quite go hard enough in addressing it.
As always, you can submit comments, advice, or questions of your own by emailing us at momanddad@slate.com. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will dive right into Elizabeth's interview.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We are back, and Elizabeth, tell us what we are going to learn today.
Right. So Lisa Lewis has been on the teen sleep beat for years. We'll actually hear just how influential her work has been and her involvement in California changing school start times. She has a new book out called The Sleep Deprived Teen that takes on a lot of the myths around teen sleep and how we can take action on a local level to make the education system work better for them. Here's the interview. I hope you guys enjoy. Lisa, we're so excited to have you on the show and to talk all about teen sleep and school times and all those things.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I guess the first thing is, like, what is your interest in teen sleep?
So I'm a parenting journalist. This did come about because of what we were facing in our own house. And that was actually 7 years ago. I've been immersed in this for the last 7 years because 2015, in fact, August of 2015, exactly 7 years ago, was when my oldest was starting high school. I have two kids. My son, the one who was just starting high school at that point, is now in college. My daughter is now a high school senior, but he was starting high school August of 2015. And at that point, our local high school started at 7:30 in the morning. So all of a sudden, there I am, we're leaving the house every day at 7:10, I'm driving him to school, and it was so early. It was the earliest he'd ever had to go to school. He's dutifully walking in, but hardly alert and, you know, in any shape that one would say is, you know, showing up and ready for a full day of learning. So that was the situation that kind of brought it home, you know, literally in our case. And so, of course, as a parenting journalist, I started looking into it, you know, because I'm curious, wanted to know, why does our school start at 7:30? And there happened to be a report that had just come out the previous year, 2014, because that's when the American Academy of Pediatrics released their policy statement recommending that middle and high schools start no earlier than 8:30. So this landmark statement had just been released. And so I sort of got involved in this issue really at a fortuitous moment. That statement had really put a stake in the ground and set the stage for so much of what's come since, with pretty much every other major medical group concurring that, yeah, 7:30 was far too early. The most recent data from the CDC, this was from 2019, they surveyed high schoolers, and what they found was only about 1 in 5 high schoolers were even hitting the minimum of 8 hours. So that gives you a sense of just how widespread this is. So it really is an issue. It's got far-reaching implications. And that was what I started writing about, you know, connected with this early start time issue.
I thought it was so interesting, too, how you highlighted that. And I think this eventually leads to sort of why school times is one of the answers to our problems with teen sleep. But you have a chapter called Not All Teens Sleep the Same. And it talks about how, like, girls are more likely to suffer from insomnia, like teens of color just in general kind of get worse sleep, that where you are on the economic spectrum, what kind of a neighborhood environment you have, like all of these things that we can't necessarily, you know, control influence your sleep. So it's affecting, like, yes, teen sleep in general is bad, but like it's also worse in these communities that are already affected by other things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was such a huge topic. As you mentioned, I have that whole chapter, and it really is just an overview of some of these disparities, just for parents and educators and community members, just to be aware of all these complicating factors that can impact sleep. Because all those things you just referenced are above and beyond what teens are already facing. And a teen can tick off more than one of those boxes. You can be female and a teen of color and living in a neighborhood where you don't feel safe, you know, and maybe you're not straight. I mean, all of those are things where each of those factors are risk factors for poor sleep. And that's on top of what our teens are already facing. So, and I think maybe just to step back and talk about what it is just across the board that we know teens are facing. So they need 8 to 10 hours. That's up until they hit age 18, because they're still growing. I mean, it's such a massive time of development. You can see it when you watch your teens, you know, transform, but they're also going through tremendous developments in terms of brain development and pruning and remodeling that's taking place. But the other key thing is that when our kids begin puberty, they begin to shift to a later sleep schedule. And I think so many people don't necessarily realize that, because you'll hear, oh, well, if they're so tired, why don't they just go to bed earlier? Well, they can't. It's biology. So it's a circadian rhythm shift, meaning the timing for when they want to be awake and when they want to sleep actually shifts later. You know, it's a complex process, obviously, with sleep. But one of the key changes is that melatonin, which is what primes us to feel sleepy, begins to be released later in the evening than it once did. So they're not feeling sleepy until about 11 o'clock at night. So, I mean, you can't just say, oh, go to bed at 9 o'clock. I mean, they're not 6 years old. They have a different body clock. So if they can't fall asleep until about 11, and then, of course, many of them are falling asleep later than that, but then they need 8 to 10 hours. So you just do the math and you can see why early start times really make it almost impossible for them to get the 8 to 10 hours of sleep that they need.
I think this is so important, because one of the arguments kind of against the later start times is that they'll just stay up later. You know, they're like, well, teens already stay up late, they'll just stay up later. So I think understanding this idea that, like, they are not tired at 8 or 9. If you as an adult have ever tried to go to sleep when you are not tired, you know, it's just fruitless. Like, you can lay in the bed for 2 more hours, but it doesn't make you sleep, you know? And so they say, okay, well, they'll just sleep longer. But studies show that when we push things later, teens sleep more. They're happy to sleep in those morning hours.
Right, right. Well, and the research, really, there are decades of research on this. So it has been proven repeatedly in all these schools that have made these start time changes. When schools start later, teens get more sleep. So what happens is they do stay up a little bit later in the evening, but they more than make up for it with the additional sleep that they're able to gain in those morning hours, because that's really the factor that's cutting into their sleep the most.
we all are like, yeah, sleep is important. But for teens, I mean, you actually talk about there's a mental health impact. There's emotional regulation issues. There is risk-taking behavior is linked to sleep, like sports and school performance is linked to sleep. And when I looked at the list in totality, I think it just adds all this weight to say, well, it's not just about kind of the sense of being healthy. It's really about all these behaviors that we think like, well, teens are, you know, have all this trouble with it. And I started to think, well, we're not really giving teens a fair chance.
They are able to make better decisions. They have better regulation because their prefrontal cortex, which is the, you know, the seat of executive functioning, is online and can counterbalance the limbic system, which is revved up first and is what's responsible for all the emotional side of things and impulsive behaviors and risky behaviors. So they're already more prone to that as teens. And then when you layer on sleep deprivation, it just makes everything that much worse.
One of the things I think I was surprised about is you advocate for sort of this sleep routine. And I think many of us parents sort of think we've left the sleep routine years when we get to teens. You know, we're like, okay, that was something we did for our babies and our toddlers and maybe even our elementary kids. But you really say that can make a huge difference in teaching them. And I was hoping you could give a few of the tips or the ideas that you found about getting teens into this sleep space.
Yes, absolutely. And it's true because as parents, yes, you know, with younger kids, it's all about the bedtime routine. And, you know, I don't know what it was like in your house, but in my house, when my kids are young, I felt like I was almost a prisoner in their room. Like it would go on and on and on. And it was, you know, you're reading to them and you're snuggling. And then there's always, but wait, one more, you know, but it's still part of that established transition to help them go from that awake stage to drifting off to sleep. And that's something that doesn't go away, even though our kids are older. I mean, for adults too, because our brains aren't like computers. You can't just go, 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 and then, you know, flip a switch and expect that you're immediately going to be able to fall asleep. We all need some kind of transition time. And so that's what having a wind down routine is all about. And it's interesting because this is one of the suggestions that I got from one of the sleep scientists I spoke with who works with professional athletes because they know sleep is a competitive advantage. That's so right. This is what she always tells them. You need to develop a wind down routine because that way you can take that with you wherever you are when you're on the road. And she also, you know, says it's important for all of us. And so for a teen, they're going to be the ones to come up with that routine. We're not going to be reading them a book anymore, but they can be reading a book. You know, an old school book, ideally, as opposed to reading it on a Kindle, because there are issues with being on tech that can sometimes complicate our efforts to go to sleep. And we can talk about those in a bit. But it could be that. It can be taking a warm bath. It can be even listening to a podcast, which isn't looking at a screen. Mm-hmm. But it's something that they find relaxing, that's kind of downtime, and figuring out what works for you, you know, for the teen, even as an adult. Like if someone said I had to go take a warm bath every night, I hate taking baths. Like they just, you know, it would not work, you know. Sure. So it's sort of like you got to come up with what's going to work for you. And then you do that same sequence of events and you're sort of priming yourself like, oh, I'm now in that getting ready to go to sleep mode. So that's a really key one. But as part of that, I think, you know, I was sort of alluding to the fact that it's not just for teens. I think it's really about making sleep a priority overall in our families, talking about it, letting them see that we are also, you know, doing these things. We value our sleep because it is bigger than just our teens.
I think that's so true. And in fact, I was thinking about how every sleep expert we have on sort of says like, listen, adults aren't that great at this either. You know, like this is an opportunity for you to reevaluate how sleep is looked at in your entire house. And with that, of course, you talk about, you know, social media and phones and all of that are a huge part of the problem. And I mean, we could probably have a whole, you know, episode and conversation just about that, but setting those boundaries too with kids, just about those and how they influence their sleep. And because they are so immersive and a connection to the outside world and making it a priority. And to be honest, one of my favorite parts of your book is sort of at the beginning where you tell us how we got here. Schools used to be more local and we had a little bit more flexibility and we've sort of ended up in this rise and shine and head off early.
Yeah. And it was really interesting for me to kind of delve into that, to try and understand how we got to this point, because schools did used to start closer to 9 a.m. You know, our high school, which has been around for about 100 years, did used to start at 9 a.m. And that was kind of the norm. But over time, these start times drifted earlier. It was due to larger factors at play, suburbanization, consolidation into larger schools, and primarily the bus system that schools use. Because in so many cases, then when they were pressed to cut costs, they looked at, gee, how can we streamline our transportation budget? And they decided that it made sense to just use one fleet of buses for elementary, middle, and high schools and have this staggered system. But at the point they were doing this, because again, this was decades ago, this research on teen sleep was not yet widely known. And so by default, a lot of them put the oldest kids in that earliest thing, thinking, oh, yeah, well, they should be best able to handle it. Well, of course, now we know that is not the case, but these legacy schedules have endured. And long past the time when, you know, we do know better at this point, there are many districts that have changed, I should say. But the issue is it's not enough of them have. I mean, it's really been on a patchwork basis, which is why it's so significant that finally it's being done at a statewide level in California.
Yeah. And I mean, I would assume too that the research and stuff that will be able to come out of such a large state doing this may push things forward. I feel like in all these interviews, parents are always like, well, what am I supposed to do? And you actually, your book talks about this. How can parents make a difference? Like, how can they change this start time? How can they be an advocate, you know, for their teens in this way and for all the teens? I mean, I think that's one of the things, again, is that changing the school time is something you can advocate for that will affect more than just your teen. And that makes it feel like a very worthy, you know, action. It's not just like, oh, we're going to take the phone away. It's like, hey, we can actually make a change for our community.
Basically, it's what I did is you get involved locally. I teamed up with other local parents. I had ended up starting a local chapter of a group called Start School Later, because they had been a tremendous information resource for me when I was reporting on this. And I was also, you know, wanting to make a change locally. So I started up a local chapter. And in fact, that was how I got looped into the bill, because when this California State Senator, Anthony Portantino, was researching it, he also had reached out to Start School Later. They ended up being a co-sponsor of the state bill, and they looped in those of us who are chapter leaders in the state. So that's how I found out, even before the bill was introduced. But it was Start School Later, and then also the California State PTA that sponsored this, because they recognize the benefits and they're all about kids' health and well-being. So I would say locally, you can consider starting a chapter or bringing it to your PTA and having an information night, because I think sharing information about just some of these basics about sleep, because so many times people aren't aware. Yeah, teens really should be getting 8 to 10 hours of sleep. Not eight. Eight's the minimum. You know, right. It's this range. And there, that's because many of them are going to need on, you know, the higher end of that range. It's helping people understand, no, they can't just go to bed earlier. There is this circadian rhythm shift. And it's talking about a lot of this and helping them understand why all of this matters. And the why, which you touched on, is it affects everyone across the board. But for our teens, it affects school performance. You know, the schools should care about it. You know, when kids are literally asleep on their desks in first period, obviously they're not learning. They have found, again, time after time, you know, these various studies, attendance goes up, tardies go down, grades go up, graduation rates go up. I mean, really significantly. This one study they looked at, it was 30,000 high schoolers, 29 high schools, 7 states. And the average graduation rate after 2 years went from 79% to 88%. So that's huge. So for the schools themselves, this makes sense. And then you look at, you know, what it means for teens in terms of mental health, the fact that being sleep deprived exacerbates depression, anxiety, suicidality. It contributes to drowsy driving crashes. It contributes to other risky behaviors, substance use. I mean, it's across the board. It really is so important. So helping people understand that and starting to do that locally is what I would recommend. What I will say, though, is I do think that having this addressed at the statewide level ultimately is probably the very best approach, because it does take it away from having to convince everyone at the local level. Because if you don't have a superintendent or, you know, president of the Board of Education or somebody who is on board with this, it's unfortunately, history has shown it's likely not going to happen.
I definitely walked away from your book with this, like, gosh, sleep is, there aren't many magic bullets in the world, but sleep may be one of them.
It really is. One of the researchers, I can remember him saying, if only everyone got a good night's sleep, can you imagine what a better world this would be? Because we're all short-tempered when we haven't gotten enough sleep. And meanwhile, you know, our broader culture is all about go, go, go. And, you know, if you can get by on less sleep, that's somehow seen as a badge of honor. But it's not. Across the board, we all do better when we get enough sleep.
Lisa, I think that is such a good place for us to end, because I really do think that is the message here. And I don't even have a teen yet. And I just thought your book was wonderful and so eye-opening. And it has so many good practical tips. So I encourage everyone to pick up a copy of Lisa's book. It's called The Sleep Deprived Teen, Why Our Teenagers Are So Tired and How Parents and Schools Can Help Them Thrive. It's out now. And we will, of course, link to it in the show notes. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I love talking about sleep. I love sleep too.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hey, Karen Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, it's finally time for recommendations. Elizabeth, what are you recommending for us this week?
Many listeners, longtime listeners, will know that I am on the continual search to find shirts for Oliver that he likes that fit his body. He tends to like things that stores print on girls' shirts, but he would like the shirt to fit him more like boys' shirts fit. And it's been really, really difficult. Well, friend of the show who I interviewed a while back, Joe Kern, was actually over at the house and he walked in wearing this rainbow cat t-shirt and Oliver went crazy. And Joe told me about the website called Tea Turtle, and they're actually famous. They have made a bunch of games, including Unstable Unicorns. They are responsible for those little plush octopuses that turn inside and outside. But they also make these really great graphic tees that you have. They have different cuts that you can pick for them, and you can get these wonderful, cute graphics. They have some that would be inappropriate for children to wear. They have plenty, though, that are appropriate. They've also licensed with Disney and Star Wars, and they're all really cute kind of drawings. But we ordered a knitting cat and like a rainbow unicorns for him on these really great fitting just t-shirts with fun designs in the colors and stuff that he loves. So I'm very happy. I'm happy that Joe passed that along to me. So if you, like me, are searching for this, T-Turtle may be a good fit for you.
Nice. Yeah, on the website, they describe themselves as cute, nerdy, pop culture t-shirts. And that's what they look like.
I've been really impressed with the quality and Oliver's so excited when he gets to wear like he has now a matching rainbow cat shirt to Joe and he is like so excited. But he just looks so much more comfortable than when I was trying to like buy other stuff and alter it. At some point I was making some of our own too, but they're just never as cute. You know, I can't do 40 colors and the glitter and all of that. So
how about you, Jamila?
I am recommending a show on HBO Max called Rap Shit. It's very fun. It's from the gifted mind of Issa Rae. It's about two young women who were friends in high school. I guess they're in their mid-20s. And they start a rap career. And they're literally starting from the bottom. And it's exciting and fun to kind of see them have their first little taste of success. And it's not a kid-friendly show, but it's a good show. So if you're into rap music, if you liked Insecure, I think you'll enjoy Rap Shit.
Is it tonally similar to Insecure?
A little bit. It's funnier. You know, I feel like there's a little bit more laughter to it. But I feel like the characters could exist in the same universe. They also have a really smart way of integrating social media into the show, which I find fun. You know, the characters are constantly going live on Instagram and, you know, interacting with people there. And we see that as well as text messages, which, you know, it's a pretty common device in TV show storytelling now, but I think it's done really well on the show.
But Issa Rae is not in it, correct?
No, she's not in it. She's the executive producer, creator.
Nice. I'm going to recommend a podcast today. It's called Mother Country Radicals. It's incredible. It's written and hosted by Zaid Dorn, who is the son of Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers, two of the co-founders of the Weather Underground. And so, like great documentaries that are done by like a family member of the subject, he just has such good access, and he's interviewing his parents throughout. And also there's a ton of archival tape from the time. So it's a really good history lesson about, you know, late 60s radical left militancy, and but also like a family portrait. It's just beautifully told. It's 10 parts. It's produced by Dustlight Productions and Odyssey and Crooked Media. It's like a collaboration, but it's really well told. I started it yesterday and I'm like, I haven't found myself absorbed in a narrative serialized show in a while. And I just want to just keep listening. It's so good.
I was going to ask if this is like binge.
You can binge.
You just want to hear the next one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's so satisfying when you find those.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not easy to do.
This looks awesome. I'm going to check this out. How many episodes are here? Let's look.
It's 10.
10 episodes.
It's 10, like 45 to 55 minutes. So it's a commitment. So you won't binge it all in a day, but totally worth your time. And that's it for our show. We'll be back in your feeds on Thursday, so be sure to tune in. While you're at it, please subscribe to the show and give us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Christy Taiwo Macanjula. For Elizabeth Newcamp and Jamila Lemieux, I'm Zach Rosen. Thanks for listening.